he got away with murder. The touchiest swordsman in all 16th century Italy, he made his enemies pay with their lives. He took his women as they pleased him. Battle brought laughter to his lips. The deepest dungeon could not hold him. Above all, the swaggering rascal was the greatest goldsmith in the world. Such was Benvenuto Cellini's own opinion, with which collectors have agreed for 400 years. And history itself, in general, confirms the adventures told in his famous autobiography. Those of his treasures that remain can be found chiefly in Florence, London, Paris, Vienna. In all America, we can boast only a bronze bust in the Gardner Museum in Boston, and a golden cup believed to be his in New York's Metropolitan. The cup is in the form of a shell, its stem a dragon crouched upon a tortoise, at its brim a sphinx, the whole a glittering enameled fantasy, out of an age with other dreams than ours. And so we speak of another age, of a man whose name was Benvenuto Cellini, in our presentation entitled The Golden Rogue. Benvenuto Cellini was born in Florence in the year of 1500. From his father, a maker of musical instruments, he inherited the skill of his hands. From childhood, he would stand in front of the gold workers' shops, lured by the rat-a-tat-tat of the little hammers, the snuffling of the bellows, the glow of the coals. He would edge his way inside to see the fire released by the gem cutters from the slumberous jewels, and to watch the gold drawn out in its infinite beauty. Soon he got himself apprenticed in one of the shops. This raised a storm, for Papa Cellini had set his heart on making a musician of him. True, those nimble little fingers on the flute could draw tears of joy from fond paternal eyes. But Benvenuto was not the lad to practice scales all day. To escape the hated notes, he would run away for months at a time, supporting himself in neighboring towns as a goldsmith's apprentice. At the age of 19, in a real temper with Papa Cellini, he set out on foot for Rome, where the Pope was said to pour out money to artists as the city's fountains poured water. We'll be right back. His first job in Rome was to ornament a silver box for a cardinal. This he worked in low relief, elaborate far beyond orders, with interlacing leaves, fruit, children, and grinning masks. So proud of the box was the shopmaster that he showed it all over town. Even prouder was Benvenuto, to send part of the fee to his father, whom he continued to support handsomely as long as the old man lived. For Cellini's hand was as quick with a gift as with a blow. During his hard-working life, he supported not only a widowed sister with six children, but another destitute family no kin to him, as well as many a young art student and model. In Rome, he made plenty of money, soon in a shop of his own. Out of it came exquisite rings and cameos and brooches, inlaid knives and daggers, silver belts for brides, a silver pitcher for a bishop. Guns, too, Cellini made, some for his own use, to go duck shooting in the marshes around the Eternal City. It was as a crack shot that set off the train of Cellini's high adventures. Rome was besieged in 1527 by the forces of Emperor Charles V of Austria, commanded by the Duc de Bourbon, Constable of France. Cellini, a volunteer guard upon the walls, peered through the fog and chanced to see the enemy plant a scaling ladder, raising his men and then his own piece. He brought down the group's leader with one shot. It proved, he told his men, to the constable himself, he was not invincible. Is Cellini merely boasting? History records that on that very day, the constable was killed by an unnamed sentry. Cellini was now given command of the swivel guns atop the mighty castle's San Angelo. The Pope himself, Clement VII, came out to watch Cellini's marksmanship as he pounded the enemy's trenches. For a month, in glee, half boyish and half fiendish, Benvenuto forgot his delicate art. The war over, Cellini was made coiner of the Vatican Mint. He also created one gorgeous ornament after another for church dignitaries. A button for the pontifical coat required years of work. Large as a butter plate, it showed God the Father surrounded by 15 angels, all embellished with gold, all set with emeralds, sapphires, rubies, and a magnificent diamond. Part of the Vatican treasury for 250 years, it went into an indemnity demanded by Napoleon Bonaparte in 1797, and Vandal hands tore out the jewels and melted down the gold. Not that Benvenuto's life was all work for the church. Once he threw down his tools to follow a pretty Sicilian face all the way to Naples. The models of Cellini, the artist, seemed to be irresistible to the man. In hate, he was as ardent as he was in love. When his brother was killed in a street fight, he did not even consider calling the law. Of what use, since the slayer was a corporal of the city guard? I took to watching this man, said Cellini, as though he had been a girl I was in love with. At last, in a dark alley, he drew his dagger and dispensed his own justice. At the death of the old pope, before the election of a new one, Rome had no rule but anarchy. A rival Vatican goldsmith named Pompeo, with 10 swordsmen, started out to find Cellini. Benvenuto happened to meet them in the streets. In the scrimmage, he stabbed Pompeo dead and put the henchmen to rout. But But Pompeo's daughter was married to a bosom friend of Pierluigi, the Pope's nephew, and at her instigation, Cellini was constantly harassed. He was waylaid by a Corsican assassin, pursued to Venice by cutthroats, routed out in the night by a posse. Always he got the best of them. But in 1537, he was arrested by papal order. To a prison cell went Cellini, where my death was resolved on, he relates. Craftily, he prepared to escape. First, he stole pinches from a prison workman. When fresh bed linen was brought him by his apprentices, he stuffed the soiled pieces in his mattress. And with the pinches, he extracted most of the nails of the iron hinges on the door, leaving just enough to hold. It was the work of weeks to get them out, and to counterfeit nail heads of rust mixed with candle wax to deceive the inspectors. When all was ready, he knelt in prayer a long time. Just 2 hours of darkness remained when he extracted the last nails from the hinges and slipped out of the cell. With the knotted strips of sheet and coils on his back, he broke out into the parapet, then let himself down into the court. Night still lingered as he watched the sentries timing his dash for the outer wall. Swarming up it, with the aid of a pole he had luckily found, he fastened his remaining cordage to a stone atop the wall and started down to freedom. But either the linen or his exhausted arms gave way, for he fell, breaking his leg. He bound up the leg with stoic method and crawled to the city gate. It was still locked, but he somehow pulled out a great stone from under the doors and slithered under in agony. Beyond the gate, mastiffs set on him, but a servant of the Cardinal of Venice recognized him and bore him to his master's place. As bad luck had it, the Cardinal wanted a bishop for a friend of his, which the Pope had not wanted to grant. Now a bargain was struck. The Cardinal got the position, and the Pope got his prisoner back. This time, Cellini was thrown into a dungeon deep at the bottom of the Castel San Angelo, a black, sodden pit where he lay delirious for days. But away at Fontainebleau Palace in France, King Francis I had expressed the wish to have as his court goldsmith this Benvenuto Cellini, of whom he had heard so much. So another influential cardinal pulled wires with the Pope. Thus, from his dungeon muck, Cellini was transported to the most brilliant court in Europe. Here he was given splendid apartments, a corps of assistants, and loaded with commissions for ambitious works in gold, silver, and bronze, including a golden salt cellar, really a banquet centerpiece. Today, the pride of a Vienna museum. The king and queen, the cardinal and nobles came often to visit his thriving shop. All promised fair. But Cellini had reckoned without the king's mistress, and practiced flatterer though he was, had neglected to invite her opinions. Thanks to her subtle opposition, little that Cellini had planned for Francis I ever could be completed. And in 1545, frustrated, he returned to Florence and became the protege of the Duke Cosimo de' Medici, noted patron of the arts. Cosimo suggested that Benvenuto make a statue of Perseus, legendary Greek hero, who slew Medusa, that evil being with the body of a beautiful maiden, but with hissing serpents instead of hair, and a face that turned men to stone at sight. Cellini made model after model in wax, stucco, and plaster. At last, after 9 years, he achieved a figure larger than life that satisfied him. Now to cast it in bronze. This was one of the most difficult tasks in sculpture ever attempted till this time. Cellini must devise his own furnaces, molds, alloys. The Duke shook his head. The Duke predicted failure. How Cellini went about his task makes the high point of his own life story. At last, I called out to set the furnace going. The logs of pine were heaped in, and my furnace worked so well that I was obliged to rush from side to side to keep it going. Battling thus for several hours, I could no longer bear up, and a sudden fever attacked me. I felt obliged to fling myself on my bed. When after 2 hours I strode into the workshop, I found the metal all curdled and the roof of the workshop afire. I sent men on the roof to stop the conflagration and told two of the hands to fetch a load of young oak wood. And when this took fire, oh, how the cake began to stir in that awful heat, to glow and sparkle in a blaze. All of a sudden, an explosion took place, attended by a tremendous flash of flame. I discovered that the cap of the furnace had blown up and the bronze was bubbling over. I had the mouths of my mold immediately open, but I noticed that the molten metal did not flow as rapidly as usual, the reason being that the heat had consumed its base alloy. Accordingly, I sent for all my pewter plates, porringers, and dishes to the number of some 200 pieces and cast them in one by one. This succeeded, and now my bronze was in perfect liquefaction, and the mold was filling. Seeing my work finished, I fell on my knees, and with all my heart, gave thanks to God. The statue of Perseus was placed in a gallery opening on a square in the heart of Florence. There today, in immortal bronze, stands the stalwart hero holding aloft the Medusa head. no less characteristic of the splendor of the gifted and untamable author are his autobiographical memoirs begun in Florence in the year of 1558. A production of the utmost energy, directness, and racy animation, setting forth one of the most singular careers in all the annals of fine art. His amours and hatreds, his passions and delights, his love of the sumptuous and the exquisite in art, his self-applause and self-assertion made this one of the most singular and fascinating books in existence. The original manuscript is at the Lorenziana in Florence. Cellino also wrote treatises on the goldsmith's art, on sculpture, and on design. Among his works of art, many of which have perished, were a colossal Mars for a fountain at Fontainebleau, and the bronzes of the doorway, coins for the papal and Florentine states, a Jupiter in silver of life size, and a bronze bust of Bindo Altoviti. His other works in existence today are the celebrated salt cellar made for Francis I at Vienna, a medallion of Clement VII in commemoration of the peace between the Christian princes, 1530, signed with the artist's name, a medal of Francis I with his portrait, also signed, and a medal of Cardinal Pietro Bembo. Cellini, while employed at the papal mint at Rome during the papacy of Clement VII and later of Paul III, executed the dies of several coins and metals, some of which still survive. He also executed in 1535 for the Medici, first Duke of Florence, a 40 soldi piece with a bust of the Duke on one side and standing figures of the saints Cosmo and Damian on the other. In today's presentation of Kaleidoscope, we are turning to the life and times of Benvenuto Cellini, the Golden Rogue. Please press fast forward, let side one of the tape expire, and turn tape over for part two. Important works which have perished include the uncompleted chalice intended for Clement VII, a gold cover for a prayer book as a gift from Pope Paul III to Charles V. He made large silver statues of Jupiter, Vulcan, and Mars, wrought for Francis I during his sojourn in Paris, a bust of Julius Caesar, and a silver cup for the Cardinal of Ferrara. The magnificent gold button, or morse, made by Cellini for Clement VII appears to have been sacrificed by Pius VI in furnishing the indemnity of 30 million francs demanded by Napoleon. We've already mentioned that particular instant in our story. Fortunately, there are in the print room of the British Museum three watercolor drawings of the splendid Morse done by F. Bertoli in the first half of the 18th century. Italian artist, metalworker, and sculptor, born in Florence, the date November 1st in the year of 1500. His father was musically inclined. His mother, Maria Lisabetta Granacci, had died before there were too many children. Benvenuto, meaning welcome, was the third child. The father destined him for his own profession and tried to thwart his inclination for design and metalwork. But the boy ran away, apprenticed himself to a man by the name of Marconi. He had already attracted some notice in Florence when, being implicated in a brawl, he was banished to Siena, where he worked for Francesco Castoro, a goldsmith. From there it was to Rome, and then onward into the Western world, to make his name known through the lands of Europe. The Golden Rogue, Benvenuto Cellini. As Cellini aged, this man who had so successfully lived by his own rules slowly conformed to those of the rest of us. At 64, he married his housekeeper and began to raise children in wedlock. Where once he had given money with an open hand, he heeded the wise of earth and invested it, and so lost all. On February 13th, in the year of 1571, the earthly adventures of Benvenuto Cellini came to a close. Yet they go on forever, since with each generation, they are rediscovered in his glittering autobiography. For almost two centuries, the manuscript was lost. When it came to light, publication of it swept Europe. Goethe, who translated it into German, declared it gave him a better picture of the times than any sober history he had ever read. Dumas devoured it, and then produced his laughing cavalier D'Artagnan, chief of the Three Musketeers. Since then, the figure of a jesting, fencing, kiss-snatching daredevil has fluttered from 100 books and flashed from 1,000 motion picture screens. The first of them all was Benvenuto Cellini. They say of this man he got away with murder. A swordsman of great capability. He made his enemies pay for their lives. He was a wencher, and he battled all the richness in life. Above all, he was a swaggering rascal, but he was also one of the greatest goldsmiths in the world. If you would ask him, he would tell you so. Those of his treasures that remain can be found chiefly in the great museums of the world. Some can be found even in America. A man who had a lust for life, who was roguish and a rascal, and still his name would be in the history books as a genius, as a craftsman and great artist. He was known in his time and in ours as the Golden Rogue, Benvenuto Cellini. On this Thursday's presentation of Kaleidoscope, June 1st, we have turned to the story of Benvenuto Cellini, artist, swordsman, lover. He was all of these. He was more. He was the Golden Rogue. This is your host, Mike Worf, inviting you to join us tomorrow at the same time at 1:15 for another presentation concerning the story and the music of Rhapsody in Blue, George Gershwin's great classic. Join us tomorrow at 1:15 for another Capital Cities presentation of Kaleidoscope. Copies of these programs are available on cassette and reel-to-reel tape. For information and a free brochure, write to Mike Worf Incorporated, Post Office Box P1091, Birmingham, Michigan, zip code 48011. That's Mike Worf Incorporated, Post Office Box P1091, Birmingham, Michigan, zip code 48011.